So Swarup continues, O Brahmana, the ecstasy and the well-being one tastes from living in that place are indescribable. To what can they be compared? Commentary, according to the laws of spiritual nature, ananda, or bliss, is the cause of sukham, eternal well-being. In other words, ananda can be said to be the internal aspect of spiritual happiness and sukham, the external. And both are beyond the scope of material knowledge. So Sarup continues. The wise say, devotional service with the Supreme Lord is so wonderful that the residents of Vaikuntha taste much greater happiness than mere liberated souls, and the residents of special abodes like Ayodhya and Dwarka find even greater happiness due to the variety of particularly special tastes available in those abodes. Commentary. It has already been described that in Ayodhya and Dwarka, the Supreme Lord's devotees serve him with special intimacy. The eternal servants of Sri Raghunath's lotus feet are therefore happier than the associates of Sri Narayan in Vaikuntha, and happier still are the eternal relatives of Sri Yadavendra in Dwarka. The devotees of Ayodhya enjoy the privilege of eternal personal service to the Lord, but the devotees of Dwarka, being entitled to taste the rasa of friendship with Krishna, are even more privileged. He goes on, but the happiness the residents of Goloka feel is by far superior to all other forms of happiness and transcends reason, and thus it is beyond the reach of words. Only those who live in Goloka and always directly perceive this happiness know its true nature, because they were objects of such friendly affection from the Lord. Just as the Goloka Vasis incarnate in Vaikuntha as eternal associates of the Lord, so do the counterparts of those devotees in Vaikuntha enter the material creation as demigods, and from time to time the demigods incarnate on the earth just to please Lord Vishnu, who wants to enjoy pastimes there. Three paragraph purport. Some persons say that many of the Vrajavasis who appeared during Krishna's pastimes under 5,000 years ago were incarnations of demigods. Nanda Maharaj, for example, is accepted as an avatar of the Vasu named Drona. If taken literally, this ideal rules out the possibility of the earthly Vrajavasis being eternal associates of the Supreme Lord. But the truth is just the opposite. As scriptures such as Uttarakhanda of Sri Padma Puran confirm, demigods like Drona are partial expansions of the original Vrajavasis, all the way around, who accompany Krishna when he descends to the earth. Goparaj, Nanda, and other devotees in Goloka expand to become avatars in Vaikuntha, and like Sri Nanda and other associates of Lord Narayana. Those devotees thus enjoy pastimes in two worlds simultaneously, namely Goloka and Vaikuntha. It is thus incorrect to assert that because the Vaikuntha associates of Narayan are avatars, they are not eternal. The Parsadas. Parsadas or Parshadas? This is Parsadas. The Parsadas of Lord Narayan expand again to become demigods within the material world. The verse under discussion calls those demigods pratirupa, or counterparts, rather than avatars, because they are living beings conditioned by material nature. Still, those demigods are empowered representatives of the Supreme Lord's personal associates. Sri Sarup will later describe how the incarnations of the Golokavasis parallel Krishna's incarnations. This implies that the earthly associates of Krishna are non-different from the original Golokavasis, just as Krishna's avatars are non-different from him. The word pratirupa, which translates as counterpart or representative, can also be taken as synonymous with the word avatar. In that case, the associates of the Lord in Vaikuntha, who expand from the original Golokavasis, are like direct reflections or pratibimba of those Golokavasis. And the further expansions of demigods are like shadows, pratichaya. Pratibimba and pratichaya. So the Golokavasis are the original, they're the prototype. And it's pratibimba, their reflections, and shadows in the demigod position. Both the reflection and the shadow of a person follow the original person as his expansions. But a person's shadow represents him less fully than his mirror image. It is in this sense that Nanda Maharaj on earth is called an avatar of Drona, only because both are avatars of Nanda Maharaj in Goloka. In fact, Nanda on earth is identical with Nanda in Goloka, and Drona is only a partial expansion. But because by worldly calculations demigods are considered relatively superior to humans, earthly Nanda is considered an incarnation of Drona. Thus, one final paragraph, it is said that demigods like Vasu Drona descend to earth to assist Lord Vishnu, the younger brother of Indra, in his enjoyment. Just as Lord Vishnu's incarnations appear in the material world for short periods of time and then occasionally reappear, so the demigods incarnate as earthly avatars whenever there is need. For example, the eternal beloved father of Krishna in Goloka, Sri Nanda Goparaj, appears in Vaikuntha as the eternal associate of Narayan called Nanda. And he also occasionally descends to the earth in his original identity. So, too, Sri Balaram, who originally resides in Goloka, is the eternal Parshada named Anantashesh in Vaikuntha. Among the demigods, he appears as the carrier of the earth in the seventh Patala region. And he sometimes comes to earth as the selfsame Balaram. Here's another example. Krishna's friend Sri Dama in Goloka appears as, in Vaikuntha, Garuda, in two different forms. One, as an eternal associate of the Lord in Vaikuntha, and the other, a son of Vinita among the demigods. And occasionally he appears on the earth as the original Sri Dama, Krishna's parents in Goloka, Sri Vasudeva and Devaki, appear as Sutapa and Prishni in Vaikuntha, Kashyapa and Aditi in Svarga, and sometimes in their original forms as Vasudeva and Devaki on earth. The avatars of other devotees follow the same pattern. End of paragraph. Next translation. And just as the incarnations of Krishna, this is Sri Sarup speaking to, giving us a little lesson in ontology here. Just as the incarnations of Krishna, the source of all incarnations, are non-different from him, so the incarnations of Goloka residents are non-different from them. Commentary. The devotees from Goloka may change their names and appearance when they descend, but they are still the same persons. As the expanded forms of Godhead are all non-different from the original Krishna, the single fountainhead of existence, so expanded forms like Nanda and Yashoda are non-different from their original forms in Goloka. Kashyapa and Aditi in heaven, however, being incomplete angsas of Vasudeva and his wife Devaki, are partially different from and partially the same as Vasudeva and Devaki on earth. Continuing, just so you have some idea, this is text 205, chapter 6. The Goloka Vasis are born sometimes as partial expansions and sometimes as their full selves. As Krishna varies his appearance according to time, place, and necessity, so do they. Short paragraph purport. The verb jayate, they are born, in this verse, is equivalent to pradur bhavanti, which means they become visible, and avataranti, which means they descend. Whenever and wherever there is need for full or partial incarnation of a particular devotee, the same devotee reveals either his whole self or partial expansion of himself. To clarify this point, Krishna and his expansions are cited as examples. In previous ages, Krishna manifested partial forms of himself in this world. In Satya Yuga, Lord Varaha descended from the Shokara Puri of Vaikuntha to lift the earth from the lower regions for various other purposes. At the end of Dwarapa Yuga, the same Krishna also descended to Sri Mathura in his full form to broadcast his loving devotional service all over the universe. Thus, Krishna's companions are at the same time, are at times impelled by their own moods of loving exchange to want to descend somewhere with their Lord and Master. Continuing. When on some pretext Krishna's Goloka associates appear to merge into their own expanded incarnations, it is just like the merging of Krishna's expansions with him. Thus, when the sages say that the expansions of Krishna's associates descended to become the originals, the sages actually mean that the expansions of those associates merge into the originals. Short purport. In Goloka, Nanda Maharaj eternally served Krishna in the role of his father. when Krishna is planning his descent to the earth to display his childhood pastimes, Nanda is naturally attracted to go with him. Then, by Krishna's arrangement, Lord Brahma blesses Vasudrona, Nanda's partial expansion, to attain perfect devotion for Vishnu. On the strength of that blessing, Drona merges into the original Nanda Maharaj and joins the entourage of the avatar Krishna. It is in this sense that the Purana tells us, quote, Drona becomes Nanda, unquote. This explanation also reconciles the account of in the Padma Purana's Kartik Mahatmya of Sri Radha's previous life and her incarnation on earth. Attracted to descend from Goloka for the service of her worshipable Lord, who is more attractive than millions of Cupids, she found some excuse for bringing her partial expansion, who merged within her when she took birth in Vrajabhumi. Continuing, Sri Sarupa is giving this lesson. In this way, please try to understand all this and everything else about Goloka without doubt or confusion according to the philosophical conclusions and other matters spoken before and taught to you by Narada. Commentary. Sri Sarupa's disciple may still have some doubts about Goloka. He may question, for example, how demons can be present in a place superior to Vaikuntha? Good question. Even if, in reality, there are no demons in Goloka, the Golokavasis still think that demons have been there and are likely to come back soon. Or, he may question how. If Goloka is purely spiritual, Satchitananda, can inanimate things like logs, stones, carts, and dust from cows' hooves exist there? And since it is not generally accepted that Goloka is greater and higher than Vaikuntha, how can the dear associates of Krishna be said to descend from Goloka to become Vaikuntha Parshadas? Next paragraph. Sarup already cleared these doubts in his description of the glories of Goloka. He briefly outlined the teachings regarding Goloka's unique stature that Narada had given him earlier in Vaikuntha, and he elucidated them with his own comments. If the Mathura Brahmana wants more scriptural evidence, that means the reader, that's us, he can refer to various statements of the Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda, and the Pancharatras. Later on, Sri Sarup will speak more about what happens when the transcendental personality of Godhead descends with his personal associates and paraphernalia. Thus the following verses of Brihat Bhagavatamrita, in those verses, the Brahman will be informed how Kamsa and other demons reside in Krishna's abode. Briefly, Kamsa and the other enemies of Krishna joined his avatar for the same reason that his Vaikuntha associates join him in their spiritual identities, namely, to facilitate Krishna's enjoyment. The carts and other apparently lifeless objects in Krishna's abode are, in fact, all alive, completely spiritual Sachit Ananda beings. According to the descriptions of Sri Brihat Bhagavatamrita, everything in Krishna's abode on earth is transcendental in the same way that it is in Vaikuntha. Scriptural evidence to support this conclusion will be cited later on. Next text. Oh, best of the Mathura Brahmanas, listen, and by the powerful influence of Krishna, I will tell you more about the great wonders of that place. Commentary. The glories of Goloka and the ecstasies of its devotees are beyond the power of words and thought, but a devotee empowered by Krishna's special grace can describe them to some extent to encourage his disciple to listen with very careful attention. Sarupa addresses him, "Oh, best of the Brahmanas from Mathura." He continues, "Every one of the millions and millions of cowherds, the children, younger persons, and elders think, I alone am most dear to Krishna. For him, in everything they do, including their eating and ordinary household chores, and Krishna also shows by his behavior that he considers them his property. There is never even a trace of duplicity in the loving exchanges between Krishna and his devotees in Goloka. Their dealings are vishuddha, completely pure. Not that Krishna truly loves only one of his devotees, and with everyone else he always is pretending." So Sarupa continues, "Nonetheless, none of them ever becomes satisfied." So it's tension time. They feel that no one is achieving Krishna's attention and affection quite like I am, but still I'm not satisfied. The thirst of their love, the mother of utter humility, simply grows stronger and stronger. Read that sentence again. The thirst of their love, dash, the mother of utter humility, dash, simply grows stronger and stronger. Commentary. The devotee's thirst for having more and more of Krishna is ever increasingly unquenchable without limit. The phrase prema Krishna, or the thirst of pure love, also means lobha. This thirst is the mother of perfect humility, because the highest love of God naturally evolves into the sorrow of separation, even while devotees are directly enjoying Krishna's company. Can anybody remember a narration that we heard yesterday that illustrates this? Yeah. Who said?
Prema Sarupa.
Can you summarize?
When Radha and Krishna were together, he was there.
Yeah. Radha turned to Krishna and asked, "Can you do something to remove this bee?" So Krishna consented, and he called his friend Madhu Mangal, and Madhu Mangal took care of getting rid of the bee, and Madhu Mangal came back and said, "Madhu is gone and he'll never return." So this is two things: Radharani's intense love for Krishna, and her, due to that intensity of her love, what's being equated here is natural humility. And so the intensity of love is the mother of that humility. That naturally, that intense love evolves into sorrow of separation, even while devotees directly enjoy Krishna's company. She got so absorbed in that mood, even she was sitting right next to Krishna, that she was in the mood that Krishna was gone forever. Madhu was gone forever. And similarly, Krishna adopted her mood. And their tears filled that lake, their tears of love. So Sri Sarup continues, what is more, it is obvious how much great love, compassion, and attachment Krishna always has for each of the millions and millions of gopis. Commentary. Preeti, affection, in this context means pure ecstatic love, and kripa, mercy, means, quote, the sign that displays the signs that display this love. And asakti, or attachment, means exclusive dedication. So, from this evidence, persons like myself can deduce by hundreds of logical arguments that no one is to be found anywhere as dear to him as the gopis. Commentary, Krishna's love, compassion, and attachment for the gopis is proof enough to convince Sarup that no one, not even any other resident of Goloka, is as dear to Krishna as the gopis. These three facts have led Sarup to discover hundreds of arguments in favor of this proposition. So what were those three facts? Their behavior, the behavior of the gopis, that everyone is thinking, I alone am most dear to Krishna. That, so although that mentality is shared by everyone, the pure behavior of the gopis confirms their superlative possession of that quality. What's next is that they're never satisfied. And the third is their sheer and utter humility. And I guess he's also saying that each person experienced all of this. And therefore I can give hundreds of logical arguments to support the statement that there's no one as dear to Krishna as the gopis. When Krishna shows special love for one of the gopis, however, it then becomes evident that she is most dear to him. All the gopis constantly take part in Krishna's pleasure pastimes one after another on the exalted level of the most perfect love, but none of them imagines that Krishna especially loves her. Commentary. Even though there are so many gopis eager to have Krishna's mercy, none of them lacks opportunities to satisfy him by her service. This is proof that all the gopis have attained the highest perfection of pure devotional service, and none of them thinks herself Krishna's only beloved. Caring nothing for their own happiness, they only want to do whatever pleases him. Thus, each of them thinks, oh, when will I be fortunate enough to become even the lowliest maidservant of Krishna? Commentary. The ambition of every gopi in Goloka is to someday gain the good fortune to be allowed entrance into Krishna's service, even in the lowest position. Such utter humility distinguishes them from the male cowherd boys, who tend to consider themselves Krishna's favorites and presume themselves very fortunate at the same time. However, the gopas often feel dissatisfied with themselves for various reasons due to the nature of their exalted love for Krishna. They then become anxious to become better servants of Krishna. The gopis' love, however, is on the highest level of perfection. Being always dissatisfied with themselves, they have absolute humility. Each of them considers herself Krishna's worst maidservant, her only hope being to somehow be permitted to continue serving him despite her disqualifications. In this way, the moods of the gopas and gopis are different. The devotees, new paragraph, the devotees of Narayana in Sri Vaikuntha also never feel satisfied that they have had enough of the ecstasy of worshipping the Lord's lotus feet. But every one of them assumes that the all-powerful personality of Godhead is completely merciful to him indiscriminately. The Golokavasis cannot think like that. You can see this theme of humility is being replayed and replayed and replayed by Sri Sarup and by Sanatana Goswami in his commentaries. So what to speak of our little position, cultivating sadhana bhakti, how important humility is. So Sarup continues, "My Lord, those devotees' intense absorption in the fathomless rasa of pure love is indeed amazing. Its exalted nature is very deep, incomprehensible, even to the great sages. One day," now that's back to Leela time, "one day, while laying on the shore of the Jamuna, Nandanandana heard that Kaliya had come back to his lake." That's the Kaliya Dhamana Leela. Commentary. "The lake in which Kaliya once stayed continued to be known as Kaliya Hrada, H-R-A-D-A. Kaliya Hrada, Kaliya's lake, even after his expulsion from Braj." So this is after the Kaliya Leela. Rumor had it, Kaliya's bad. "Alone, Krishna quickly went there and rapidly climbed a nipa," which is a kadamba tree. "As he dove into the lake, water splashed onto the shore." Commentary. "Krishna thought it wise not to bring his companions with him to Kaliya Lake, which had become poisoned again. He was concerned also that they might try to stop him from jumping into the lake." The Bhagavatam 10.16.7 describes the vigorous way Krishna dove. Translation. "When the Supreme Personality of Godhead landed in the Serpent's Lake, the snakes there became extremely agitated and began breathing heavily, further polluting it with volumes of poison. The force of the Lord's entrance into the lake caused it to overflow on all sides, and poisonous, fearsome waves flooded the surrounding lands up to a distance of 100 bow lengths. This is not at all amazing, however, for the Supreme Lord possesses infinite strength." Continuing, "Krishna frolicked in the water, enjoying the sports of swimming back and forth and making various loud noises," just like your son was doing today. "But then he came close to the cruel Kaliya and out of eager curiosity allowed himself to be enveloped in his coils." Commentary. "When Krishna played in the water, the noise he created was not ordinary, but sounded like very pleasing music." Continuing, "When Krishna's companions, the coward boys, noticed that he had gone somewhere, it was as if death had struck all of them down. Anxiously looking for him, they found the marks of his feet and followed them to the lake." Commentary. "At first, the coward boys, who had no idea where Krishna might have gone, didn't know what to do. After a little while, they noticed footprints leading out of the village. Those footprints could not have been anyone but Krishna's, because they had the special marks of a flag, elephant goad, and so on. When they saw Krishna motionless, his many young friends all fainted. They were the same boys who would lose their will to live when, but for a moment, they could not see him on the forest paths." There is some description forget where this description is from. But it's said that when the cowherd boys were with Krishna, maybe it's from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when he would pass, so there was a tree between the boy and Krishna, and for the duration of time of Krishna's passing behind the tree, they almost lost their life out of feeling the separation from Krishna. And then when Krishna would appear, their life would come back again. Such intense love. Commentary. The footprints brought the boys to the lake, where they saw Krishna enwrapped in serpent's coils and mobilized. They would lose all enthusiasm for living when, on their excursions in the forest, Krishna passed for a moment behind a tree, and they could not see him. Now to see Kaliya threatening to kill Krishna struck them with terror. Standing on the shore, all the village animals, the cows, bulls, calves, and others, as well as the forest animals, eyes fixed on Krishna's face, created a great roar of suffering with their cries. Exhausted from crying loudly, birds flew precipitously into the lake. The trees and other vegetation at once dried up, and many terribly inauspicious omens appeared. Commentary. All creatures, including the birds and plants, agonized over the predicament Krishna was in. They were all on the verge of death. The earth trembled, and the other portentous omens appeared, which includes, according to Bhagavatam, chapter 16, those on earth, those in the sky, and those in the bodies of living creatures, which announced imminent danger. From within his mind, Krishna... Krishna dispatched one old man who ran... I've heard this narrated many times, and I never knew where it was from. And if you remember from when we visited Kaliyagata, one Krishna, as Super Soul Krishna, indicated to one elderly person by the bank there to go back and tell Nanda and Jasoda what's going on. That's what's being described here. And then Balaram, everybody reacts in according to their rasa. Weeping fearfully, the messenger cried out, "Alas, alas!" and told the cowherds what was happening. Commentary. Observing bad omens and having received no news of Krishna, Sri Nanda and the other cowherds were about to die from anxiety. To relieve them of their suffering, Krishna, via a telepathic message, sent an old cowherd to go to the villagers and tell them of the situation. Had Krishna not ordered him to go in that way, the old man would not have had the strength to run back to Braj. Krishna is Prabhu, and thus he can empower anyone to do anything, so as to not interfere with anyone's intimate rasa. He made an elder, whose words were most likely to be trusted, his messenger. Actually, the evil omens, the desperate feelings of the Vrajavasis felt from seeing them, and the lack of news about Krishna, were all orchestrated by Krishna to increase the Vrajavasis' special love for him. Surely they would come quickly to Kaliya's lake when they learned he was there. Having noticed many frightening omens, the cowherd villagers were exceedingly agitated with concern for Krishna, the source of Braj's good fortune, had already gone out in a flurry to look for him. Commentary. The Vrajavasis knew that as long as Krishna stayed with them, nothing bad would ever happen. The evil portents they were seeing might therefore indicate that Krishna had already gone away. With this terrible thought in their mind, they all at once went out to look for him. They were already outside the village when the old messenger met them. Next text. The added force of the old man's report, spoken with a voice choking in his throat, struck them like an unexpected lightning bolt. Commentary. The shock of hearing that Kaliya had returned and was again holding Krishna's coils was unbearable. Sitting in his house, Balaram exclaimed, "This can't be true! This can't be true!" He tried to console the people of Raj who were running forward like living corpses. Balaram informed his mother, Rohini, of the situation, somehow got her to stay back and watch the house, and ran to catch up with those who were already leaving. Commentary. Knowing his younger brother's power, Balaram couldn't believe that Kali had defeated him. He came out of the house spontaneously shouting, "This can't be true!" And he ran into the street. Seeing the Vrajavasis hurrying on their way to join the search for Krishna, Balaram tried to calm them down. He had to speak to his mother before leaving. And so he was one of the last to arrive on the scene. Soon Balaram reached the lake. Seeing his younger brother in such a state, he was unable to maintain his gravity and wept in the distress of love. As he lamented in ways that shattered logs and stones, suddenly he fainted, just as Yashoda and Nanda have. Commentary. In the bewildering commotion, Yashoda and Nanda had already fainted and fallen to the ground. Then all the living beings present let out a great and fearful cry that made the whole universe also cry in pain. Awakened by that tumult, Balaram, the crest jewel of determined heroes, with great effort steadied himself. A moment later, Krishna's parents regained consciousness. Seeing their son in such a state, they cried loudly and rushed to enter the lake. But powerful Sri Balaram stopped them with his arms. Pretty exciting, huh? Commentary. It had taken all of Lord Balaram's mental strength to convince his mother to stay home. And now it took all his physical strength to restrain Nanda and Yashoda. We have to continue. Balaram was overcome by distress to see everyone fainted on the ground, looking just as if they were dead. In a choking voice, he called out to Krishna, telling him the following. Sri Baladev said, "These are not your associates who live in Vaikuntha. They are not the forest monkeys, nor the Yadavas. They are your devotees of Goloka, whose only life is you. They are dying, my lord, and there's nothing I can do to save them." Commentary. As Balaram reminds Krishna, his Goloka devotees are non-different from his Vaikuntha Parshadas, his monkey soldiers of Ayodhya like Hanuman, and the Yadus of Dwaraka like Uddhava. More than all these other devotees, the Golokavasis are exclusively dependent on Krishna. The devotees of Vaikuntha, Ayodhya, and Dwaraka can somehow manage to tolerate separation from Krishna. They are always aware of Krishna's omnipotency, and so they can respond to Balaram's consolation. The hearts of these Golokavasis, however, have lost all balance due to the excessive weight of their prema, and they fail to properly appreciate Krishna's power. If Krishna himself does not do something to relieve them, they are certainly going to die. There's a very similar scene from part one when Balaram is called upon by Krishna to give a report. They're in Dwaraka and he's called upon to give a report. What's the condition in Vrindavan? And Balaram gives such a pitiable depiction because he's just been here. They're about to die. You have to go.
Lord Krishna, my brother, you have to go. Because he's understanding he is his, the all-powerful, supremely opulent master of all, and Balaram's his servant. He's pleading with him, please go back to Vrindavan and save their lives. So he's doing similar here with this Leela. Before these devotees give up their life heirs, please abandon this game, oh most merciful one. Otherwise, dear Krishna, only friend of the cowherds, whose nature is so gentle, you will have reason to lament. Commentary. Krishna is the reservoir of all rasas, and he also embodies with his personality the karuna rasa, or mood of pathos. He may be enjoying the sport of pretending to be lifeless, but his devotees are being driven to desperation by it. If he does not stop playing like this, he will be the last one to cry when all his devotees have died. Lord Balaram is playing on Krishna's emotions like this because he knows that Krishna can tolerate any sufferings, cannot tolerate any sufferings from his devotees. Next text.